Thank you all for joining me today. I am joined by four of our leading experts to discuss the future of health and wellness, a domain that has transformed from an industry into a consumer lifestyle. And while uttering the words wellness and lifestyle in the same sentence may conjure images of vocal vegans or yoga poses on the beach posted on Instagram, it's a lot bigger than that. Consumers are taking ownership of their health, and they are seeking long-term, holistic solutions from every industry and sector. So today we're here to talk about those changes, and we're here to talk about consumer lifestyle, the drivers behind the shift, and the opportunities and challenges that it presents for brands both inside of the health and wellness industry and outside. All right, well, let's just jump in then. So Matt, can you tell me how long you have been working in consumer health?
I've been working in consumer health for over 7 years now, yeah.
Consumers taking on wellness type things in their lifestyle, that's not something that is necessarily new. But what about this moment in time are you seeing that is new, is unique?
I mean, consumers have always been, you know, thinking about their health. At least a segment of consumers have been thinking about their health for you know, decades now. It's been front of mind for a lot of formulations within consumer health, and even within, you know, categories that are near to consumer health, like, you know, functional foods and beverages. They've been in the market for 15, 20, 30 years. But I think what's kind of unique about this moment and why we're calling it wellness, why it's all one kind of title, is the fact that it has become a lifestyle. People are orienting a lot of their behaviors, and certainly a lot of their purchasing behaviors, around adhering to this lifestyle. You know, I want to live healthier, but I also want to live healthier in a way that's comfortable to me. So it doesn't mean that I want to take a supplement. It means potentially that I want to take a suite of products that help me get energized and be the best version of myself, not just for now, but sustained into the future.
You mentioned functional foods, so that'll take me to Maria. Lifestyles, you know, we're at the beginning of the year. People are talking about making these healthy changes in their lives. And you hear people say, like, diet and exercise, and diet always comes first. So I'm wondering, what are you seeing in the food and nutrition industry that reflects this shift towards wellness as a lifestyle?
Yeah, so I think we've seen very interesting shifts in the food industry. I would say that we've been seeing this movement from more sort of like physical-oriented kind of positionings. You think about like added protein for like muscle recovery. We've seen that shift more towards, more holistic positionings like need states, for example. So if you think about gut health, it's not just about digestion. It's also about, you know, a happy gut equals a happy mood. We've seen this kind of like transition towards like these more holistic positionings, as well as, relaxation, energy, cognitive function. And I think all of these is kind of like, is triggered by, you know, more and more stress, uncertainty in the world we live. And it also like the culture of self-optimization and self-improvement, right? So I think like consumers are looking to experiment with these kind of like functional foods. It's still pretty niche concept in the functional food space, but we've seen like really interesting pockets of growth in all of these areas. With ingredients like nootropics or adaptogens for like stress relief, and very interesting cultural nuances as well on that front, like botanicals, like Chinese medicine, like, you know, those kind of things. So, I do see these shifts happening in the food industry, which are becoming, you know, more holistic positionings, which is really aligned to what Matt was mentioned as well.
Okay. What I'm hearing is that it's not just about, generally, it's not about just the physical need states anymore. And I know that that's something that's really relevant to your work, Irina, studying women's health, which, you know, it's, I'd say it's new. I know it's not new. It's at least in my personal experience, at least 37 years old. But I know that it's fairly new as something that we talk about at Euromonitor and is available to consumers at large. So can you speak a little bit about women's health and this lifestyle shift?
Yeah, well, women's health is certainly not new, but has certainly gathered momentum in the last several years, really presented by a huge kind of opportunity for a transformation for, you know, society, consumers, but also presenting a large business investment opportunity as well across multiple industries. And when we talk wellness and lifestyle, certainly a key prerequisite for addressing women's health solutions and services in product design and service design is really hinges on that holistic view. So really leveraging not just the physical expressions, but also the mental, emotional, also nutritional, and even over and above the lifestyle component. So really making correlations and also the associations between those psychological and physical interrelations and how they're interlinked to make sure that those multiple and multidimensional need states are addressed as part of solution design, as part of experiences and outcomes. So I think wellness as an overall driver really is something that is reflecting on the acceleration of women's health. And we're talking about holistic wellness, but this also means not just multiple need states, but also we're talking about more inclusive wellness. So previously kind of taboo or underserved areas like sexual wellness, for example, mental well-being and women's health are now kind of becoming a more critical component of that evolution of the wellness journey. Pretty much kind of dubbed as the next frontier, really, in terms of investment from business, and also in parallel with that kind of unmet consumer demand for solutions around women's health specific conditions, needs, and life stages, not just conditions, medical conditions, but also different life cycles and concerns that come alongside that.
As we first started talking about this topic, I was struggling a little bit, Nick, I have to admit, of like figuring out how you fit in. And then, you know, I was struggling, and then I turned on the happy light that was at my desk to improve my mood, and I raised my standing desk, and I sat in my ergonomic chair, and I was like, oh no, okay, I get it now. I'm already a part of this. So could you speak to a little bit about the health, the wellness lifestyle in your sector?
Okay. If we look pre-pandemic, I would say the wellness trend was something that bled into the home products from other industries where it was strong. And it was something that was relatively niche. It was known it was there. We had steam going on in certain parts of the home. That was part of a wellness story. We had ingredients inside of products, but it was quite a small part of the conversation. And then we had the biggest loneliness epidemic that we've known as a species, and we were all hiding for months on end. And that has triggered so much time inside of the home, so much pressure on the outside life beyond the home, that the in-home part is now compensating, and it's become part of an area to recharge, an area to recover, to actually cope with these increasing stresses out of the home through the in-home life, the in-home lifestyle, and all the things we're doing. It's not just in the UK that we've started to actually give our plants names. It's not just in the UK that we're actually starting to have vegan pet food, where we're actually trying to feed a carnivore something to make ourselves feel better. So there's all manner of elements to this where it's become critically central to strategy, where pre-pandemic it wasn't. And we've seen across a whole raft of products like indoor plants, where their trajectory for the forecast looking 5 years, 6 years ahead has actually dramatically changed because of these stresses, because of these pressures. They weren't generally, gardening was something people kind of did as hobbies. Lots of people were into it, but suddenly we had millions of people across the world take up the hobby, and many of them are sticking to it. So it's that kind of thing where it's become central to strategy, where perhaps pre-2019, it wasn't as serious, it wasn't as big a part of the thinking.
So what I want to talk about now is kind of in a very cinematic way, how did we get here? Like, what has brought consumers to this lifestyle change? So I'm wondering, Matt, can you speak to a little bit about what's the biggest driver that you think is behind this adoption of the wellness lifestyle?
Yeah, I think there are a couple areas that I see from within the consumer health space as I see products and services moving away from pure health into wellness. One aspect is around ingredients. And I think this was mentioned before, but consumers have a better sense of the types of, especially in consumers that are more interested in wellness products and wellness orientation, around ingredients that they feel really meet those needs. And there have been over the past decade or so, the rise of so-called health halo ingredients, right? So a good example there is protein. That's no surprise. You're also seeing the biotics suite of products, so probiotics, prebiotics, products like collagen, for instance. And these products maybe have an orientation for some consumers that are more narrow, but increasingly, as it's become more, they've become more broadly used, they're now oriented, again, around lifestyle, around holistic living, around these other aspects, and that can more easily allow them to be incorporated into food and beverage products, or in certain cases around beauty products or other types of products, right? So that's one area. The other area is format. And there have been a lot of innovations in recent years around bioavailability for ingredients such as the ones I just mentioned, so that you can take a product now that has a health orientation and quickly redesign it and say, now this is a food and beverage product, or this is a topical product for beauty, personal care, or something like that. And that movement is much, much quicker than it was about a decade ago, right? In fact, when you get a new product in the market now, there's already formulators that are thinking, what is the easiest way that I can get this away from a pill-based design, which is in the supplements area, and to something that we know more consumers are going to be enthusiastic about? Can we get this into a bar? Or can we get this into a snack food or something else? Because we know that more consumers are going to be really enthusiastic about that ingredient in that format, as opposed to something that screams more narrowly focused around health.
Can someone speak to what is kind of getting consumers to think outside of traditional solutions for health and wellness? Is it a lack of those types of ingredients, or is there something else going on?
Right.
What are consumers looking for? What are they missing?
I think from my side, where I see particularly like the opportunity that I see in the food industry in this particular aspect that really connects to what Matt was saying, is that the consumer is looking for much more friendlier formats that align better with their lifestyles. And I think that is where there is a big opportunity for the food industry, because if you're thinking about like a snack bar, or if you're thinking about like a drinking milk product or whatever it is, right, you not only choosing these products because of the functionality outcome, which it is an important one, but you're also delivering potentially some nutrition, you are delivering an experience through taste, through texture, right? So you are creating that sort of like positive experience around it. And I think is that sort of like much more friendlier formats that you know, can help consumers include this into their everyday lifestyles, right? And you know, connecting to the point is like the pill fatigue is there for many consumers. The concept of food as medicine is resonating along with consumers as well. So I think that is an important aspect in why this is kind of like moving into this more holistic sort of like wellness trend that is kind of like really plays in every single part, and the food is a very important one in that sense.
Yeah, one area I'd like to add, as much as we're looking at wellness evolving into kind of a natural lifestyle component, I think we shouldn't undermine the importance of what technology and digitalization is playing into the wellness field. And this is almost like slightly counteractive to what we've been saying, because this is pretty much enabling so much kind of data-driven, tech-enabled self-enhancement, optimization, and is also providing a lot of access to multiple health solutions, such as virtual care and so on. So we shouldn't underestimate that kind of health component and achieving that health access and enabling more advanced diagnostics within the health domain, which is also enabling those more advanced personalized solutions. And in particular with women's health, femtech is playing such a massive in shifting some of the standards there. We're seeing anything from kind of fertility tracking to hormonal testing to virtual care and patient support, and even more really highly regulated medical delivery within the women's health space. So a lot of potential for M&A or partnership for a lot of players that want to tap into that femtech space is something to definitely explore, certainly in the area of diagnostics, as I mentioned, particularly non-invasive diagnostics, because within women's health, a lot of experiences are not necessarily positive in terms of the diagnostics field. So that's something that is bound to transform the wellness space too, with women's health being at the next frontier in that sort of investment.
Combining a couple of ideas here, Maria, you were talking about like friendly formats, and Irina, you were talking about like positive experiences. I'm wondering, Nick, can you speak to like emotional connections to health and wellness?
I think what you've been talking about is this spread and the actual way in which it's manifesting in new ways and how it's actually changing. I think a lot of that's to do with the pressures and the tensions that people have been under over the last 3 to 4 years, where it's new, it's coming at us from new directions. We're challenged on things that we haven't been challenged on before. The pandemic's created all manner of new stresses inside of life. So we can see it manifesting in a whole bunch of new behaviors. We saw it within sleep health and the degree of spending to try and recover a good night of sleep. And that's not just about a bed. It's taken us off into other industries. And that's part of this migration, is we're seeing it go into aromatherapy. It's gone off into home care and the fragrance side of things. That's part of what's causing this new manifestation. And you're talking about emotions. We've invested so much humanizing emotion into pets, into plants, even into robots and inanimate objects around the home, where they've taken on a new role inside of our life. And this is an authentic emotion. It's not something brands are having to force into the shopping journey. It's already there. People have put so much more emotion into this. If I look at things like pet food, I'm seeing pet food that is indistinguishable from something you might try and feed to your child. It's packaged to be the same thing. They've put little symbols around it, like big eyes and everything, to try and do the embodiment of childhood. We've got stories about puppies and sensitive skin on pet food. So this whole emotional level that is invested into this sort of product, into this sort of shopping journey, has changed dramatically. And now, speaking to one of the points Irina was talking about earlier, this startup behavior has been really strongly related to wellness. During the boom with e-commerce particularly having such a strong role within sales, and with so many traditional supplies of products curtailed and having major logistics challenges, it's given this opening for wellness first, sustainability first platforms to actually get far more shouting power than they might have had. And it lasted a good 18 months, where it's given them enough scale to actually become attractive. And we've seen a number of these startups get wellness very strongly in as part of their platform. That's made them very attractive for acquisition from the leaders who realize they have to play catch up. And we're seeing that as one of the other big drivers that's creating growth, that's driving mergers and acquisitions strategy.
So it's not just the consumers that are driving this, it's the money too.
It's growth. And
yeah.
I kind of really agree with Nick's point here on emotion. I think we're seeing something that is going beyond even the mental and emotional. We're heading into the spiritual space, right? And happiness is kind of becoming that ultimate self-expression of wellness itself. So instilling and embedding emotional connection and emotional support through products and services is kind of becoming paramount. And this can manifest not just in terms of ingredient reformulations, in actual claims, benefit expressions, but more, even more importantly, it's about that projecting that social impact, social inclusivity. And in the women's health space, it is about projecting that empathy. So that brand communication that injects that empathy really resonates with the importance of that emotional relevance that everyone really should be investing in beyond product, beyond solution, beyond function, something what we want to call, function, emotion beyond function.
Yeah, I just want to add a quick point on that because I totally agree. And I think when I was talking earlier about that movement from like physical to mental well-being, moving into the spiritual, as Irina is just saying, I think the claims perspective is really important here because some of these kind of like need states sort of frameworks really provide a very powerful lens that connects the physical and mental triggers with the emotional substrates. And if you think about, you know, happy as I am, and you think about positioning such as like vitality or power or balance, all of these kind of like plays into these interlinked sort of triggers that I think are very important to kind of like communicate and engage with consumers from all of these angles.
As health and wellness expands, you know, the edges are expanding and the edges are getting a little bit blurrier too. So addressing some of these things that live in that blurry area. We've addressed ingredients. We've talked about digitalization, technology, wearables. These things are branching out into other industries. And now getting into product claims, are there any other emerging claims? You know, Maria, I heard you say some really interesting ones that I haven't quite thought of, like balancing. Like that's something that's really kind of difficult to pin down. So what other types of health claims are we seeing right now?
Yes, I actually don't think we track balance specifically, but yeah, we've seen, at least in my industry, in the food industry, we are starting to see positions towards like energy, cognitive health, memory care. In the food industry, it's still quite niche, but we are starting to see this kind of like shift in certain categories like snacks and dairy mainly. Even like, for example, coffee creamers. If you think about it, like mental clarity and focus, you put in the coffee creamer into your coffee, so you're combining two categories that deliver those sort of functionalities. So yeah, definitely we've seen growth into those spaces across quite a few markets. And even like associations of like probiotics, which we used to tend to just associate with digestion or immunity. We are seeing it now for stress relief, for sleep aid in markets like Japan, for example. So you are seeing that sort of like more holistic sort of transition of ingredient claim combinations that are very interesting.
So within the home products, that's I'm seeing a similar structure coming in terms of how the propositions are building. So from the entry position, it seems that wellness manifests for me as effectively like low chemistry, low toxicity, reduced levels of involvement for things. So we reduce the ingredients that are doing harm. The first rule of entry is do no harm. That's position one. And I'm seeing a step up where we get into the beginning of feel good. And the beginning is around ethics and feel good about the purchase, feel good about the brand. That's talking to one of the things Irina was mentioning earlier in terms of you've got to actually sort out this inclusivity It's got to feel good to actually join in with your brand, to join in with your proposition. We're seeing things in that space like Be Friendly or Vegan, or it's getting into this ethics side of the equation. And towards the top end, we're into the experiential, and it's literally feel good. And this is where we're into the psychotropics. We've got experiments going on around serotonin levels, what happens within brain chemistry. There's even dopamine. We're into things like eccentric molecules around scent, which are able to evoke sentimentality, to evoke nostalgia and personalized scent structures. So that's effectively where a lot of the experiments towards the top end and these emotionally oriented propositions are coming from. Cannabis on bedding, that kind of thing. This is where it's all heading to.
All right. So this is happening pretty quickly. It sounds like that everything is kind of just exploding outwards and filtering into other industries. I'd love to speak a little bit about, actually, I'd like to talk a lot about what challenges there are for brands that are still operating in consumer health. Matt, what are the biggest challenges?
Well, I think us being here today kind of supports that there are challenges, obviously. If you're starting to compete not just within the products and the brands that you're used to competing in, I'm talking specifically around, for instance, supplements, but now you're competing with food and beverage, with, you know, beauty in these cases, even with what Nick has been supplying here, a lot of the interesting innovations in even home care. If health can now be kind of turned inside out as wellness, and that could be anything, you really have risks all over the place. I think that consumer health still has a major role to play even within this architecture of wellness, principally because it is a health category. All these other categories have health orientations, but consumer health, obviously, if that is what's going on principally in consumer health. So within a category like supplements, I think one of the orientations that I think a lot of the players are engaging with now as a near-term bulwark against, cannibalization in other industries is around multifunctionality, right? So especially in the last few years in markets like in Western Europe and the United States, where purchasing power has taken a considerable hit, they are trying to advocate for, you know, more positionings, more need states in one bottle, right? So I think Maria mentioned this before, but like the interplay, for instance, of mental health and cognition, or digestive health and mental health, digestive health and immunity, and you start barnacling on more and more need states within a bottle. This doesn't even require new formulations. A lot of times this is just repositioning existing products in the market, but it's addressing the fact that consumers are wanting more out of each individual product they're engaging with, and they have pricing pressures, right? So this is something that I think that consumer health companies are well positioned to orient around. The second area that I think is really important is whether or not these products are do as they are told. Now, supplements on this point aren't perfect either, without a doubt. But I think good supplements companies that have scientific backing can orient around a messaging of bioavailability. These pills actually can give you the amount that you need to engage in this type of need state. Whereas that's going to be increasingly more difficult in different formats, for instance, in food and beverage or even in gummies. So, still take your pills, because there's a benefit there that you will get all the needs that you say you want, you'll get out of this pill, whereas you might not get it in some of these other sexier options.
So the risk is that you could lose your customers if you're not able to show up.
Right. I think that there's a risk that they've already lost many of their customers. I think right now it's what is the messaging that both retains your core customers, but also gives new or softer customers the reasons to still engage with a supplement, as opposed to going to something that more directly fits an on-the-go active lifestyle.
I think on the topic of challenges, I would like to go back to ethics. Because if consumers are taking that stronger stance on social and values, I think it's really important that anyone who plays in the wellness space, and it's an increasingly saturated and overcrowded marketplace, I think one key distinguishing unique selling point a brand can offer is that alignment with social values. And really, a brand that is able to demonstrate that they are, in some sense, adding some meaningful value, right? And that they are, in fact, narrowing a lot of the disparities and gaps in health access, wellness access, and quality of outcomes. And this most certainly plays very much in the wellness, in the women's health space, with a very minimal funding actually going into improving the quality and improving access. So really balancing profitability and commercialization with that ethical component, and meaning that that wellness, socioeconomic wellness gap is narrowing. I think that's a critical component, and something going back, probably also another opportunity, but also a challenge to Matt's point on science. I think consumers are expecting something that is that works, right? No gimmicks, something that actually is working, and they're becoming a lot more savvy about the science behind products, behind services, and that is almost expected now. So science backing and more importantly, medical expertise as well. I think, especially in the beauty space, everything now is, you know, a lot of brands are projecting that medical doctor, dermatologist endorsement, which is critical to kind of resonating without those science-backed expectations of consumers. And so medical expertise could also really boost some of those developments in women's health, for example, because to counterbalance that potential conflict between profitability and innovation versus ethical and healthcare, improving healthcare outcomes as well. So it can be a challenge and it can be a great opportunity in some industry spaces.
I feel that technology plays a role in finding that balance between genuineness and like proving efficacy.
Technology is paramount, and embedding that technology into services and solutions, yes. But for that, retention and adoption, really, it is about kind of preserving that human element. And that goes back to emotion, right? So those kind of hybrid approaches where technology includes a human aspect or expertise by, clinicians or nutritionists, or whether it's from an interaction point of view or whether it's embedded within the service and the model, is probably critical. So technology will empower a lot of consumers to take charge of their own health, but for that to be relatable and for it to resonate and for it to stick, I think it would be critical to embed that within the lifestyle, within the routines that already exist, and also bring in that kind of interactive human and emotional component as part of it.
And then what are the biggest opportunities out there? Where can brands focus their energy the most in this wellness lifestyle world?
I mean, within food, I think what is important is to understand the local nuances. I think we cannot have food with functionalities that is kind of like have a blanket approach, and it's just like the opportunity would be to understand where the consumer preferences in different geographies, understand, align those with the nutrition ingredients that they're connecting the most with, and then deliver those on in really sort of like friendly formats that they are convenient and that really align with the lifestyle of these consumers. And just to give you a very quick example, so we were talking about protein, but we've seen this kind of like shift from animal-based protein to plant-based protein. So, and that maybe we're moving it from having it in just snacks to really across the board of the food industry. Then we're seeing how, probiotics, again, were just mostly in the dairy space, but now we've seen it in snacks, we have it in baked goods, we have it in all over. So it is about embedding some of those trends into sort of your everyday sort of foods in a friendly way. I would say there are challenges as well, connecting to my point as well. Like in the food industry, we see there is not that bioavailability. So a lot of it is really driven by soft claims. And it is about, you know, what... How are we engaging with the consumer? So it is, you know, through the format, it is through added nutrition, but possibly at the end of the day, if you're just having like that particular like snack, is it going to affect your immunity by itself? Probably not. So there are obviously challenges as well in this space. It's just kind of like one bit of a broader sort of change or of a broader lifestyle of as we are talking about. Yeah.
If I'm thinking within home products, but it's a wider observation, when you're looking at opportunity areas within wellness, what strikes me the most is you've got to look across the board. You can't look inside of a silo. There are so many opportunities for learning where one industry is further ahead on the journey, and there are things that that industry might well have learned. If you just go in silo and don't think about what else is out there, you'll just go and reinvent the wheel. And there's quite a few companies that have been into that space. And the moment you start looking cross industry and you start thinking of wellness as a lifestyle, as this wider change in thinking, you get to see that actually there's so many crossovers. And you, like, for instance, if we think about home, what is wellness? Is wellness the family? Is wellness the individual? How do you handle it when the wellness of one person has just actually created a problem in the wellness of another? So one of the most obvious ones we've seen within home and garden, people have taken down a wall to actually lead into this naturals thing, natural light, natural airflow, but they've just destroyed someone else's privacy. And so we've now got this conflict around space and pressures that are new, created by a wellness solution. So I think that's one of the biggest observations I would make, is we have to look at this wider picture and the idea of tensions within wellness. It's a very rich area for innovation because effectively we've got lots of people involved, lots of tensions, lots of needs across an environment. You can't just fix one thing in isolation. You'll change lots of things around it with any change you're going to make. So I think there's lots of opportunities, lots of material for ideation, particularly within this space.
I want to wrap up with one last big question, and that is this something that's going to stick? Or is this just people are picking up wellness for now and it'll be gone in 2 years?
I think the interesting thing for this on my side of perspective is there's a lot of tensions which are creating the interest in wellness right now. And as long as there's the instability, as long as there's the stresses, as long as there's things going on which make us uncomfortable, where we're seeking solutions in life to regain that comfort, to regain that happiness, that's effectively what's driving this background need. And until everything starts to calm down and feel a little more sane in everything that's going on away from the home, this isn't going to go anywhere. And one of the conversations a couple of days ago was I heard about IKEA, and IKEA started to promote in Spain post-pandemic, post-inflation pricing. And this has just started to happen, as this idea, it's, we can be calm now, it's all controlled now, we're back to knowing. And literally within a few days, we hear about what's happened at the cost of shipping when it's going through the Suez Canal and the Mediterranean. We're not into stability yet. We're not into this time period of knowledge about what's coming. And as long as that instability is with us, this focus on wellness, this focus on stress, this focus on controlling emotions is also going to be with us.
I completely agree with Nick. I think I think about it from a different perspective. I think about who is potentially going to be leading whatever we consider this marketplace in the next 2 years, the next 5 years, the next 10 years. I think there's still going to be this marketplace, and maybe in a form that is similar to what we see now. I think one thing that I would love to see, if I had a crystal ball, is who is going to be leading the kind of broad movement of engaging with these ready-made consumers for wellness? Because right now it's intermediated by, you know, this loose affiliation of kind of social media influencers. Yes, there are some people who maybe have accreditations, but a lot of times it's just, you know, people are trying to make a quick buck, frankly. And you know, I have a pessimistic and an optimistic take on this. The pessimistic take is this probably is going to be the same. There's going to be the same people that are going to be leading the charge in 10 years. But I'd like to think that we can become more sophisticated as a consumer base and engaging with the products and really surfacing the products actually do as they're designed. And one way where that actually could potentially be the case is when right now in my space, at least, the acquisition pipeline has completely dried up for all of the macroeconomic reasons we've talked about and the instability that's behind that. If that starts to move, I think that we'll start to see bets on some of these better, kind of more niche products, and those potentially could then be more elevated in consumers' minds. And then you start to winnow out maybe some of the less trustworthy products. But I can't bet one way or the other. I think there's both a positive and a negative for the future. I hope we go in the positive direction.
So I'm going to just pick up on Matt's positive outlook because I do also hope and I do think that's where wellness is heading with health and wellness kind of converging more and more. And that medical grade expertise and that clinical efficacy becoming a lot more important. I don't think any brand will be able to get away with any kind of elusive concepts here. I think they need to be more uniquely defined with greater efficacy, with greater long-term kind of innovation perspectives that will enhance, enrich, improve consumers' quality of lives rather than kind of short product life cycles of brands and products and gimmicks that disappear, right? So I think this long-term component and that kind of medical grade and that clinical backing is going to start being more and more pervasive in wellness in the future.
All right, well, maybe with all of this information, it'll be one of our viewers who in 10 years will be leading the pack on wellness. Thank you all for joining me today.
Thank you, Jessica.